3 times as likely to be sexually assaulted, 4 times as likely to go missing or be murdered. Indigenous women in Canada are violated at rates far higher than non-Native women, something Indigenous families have known for a long time, but only recently has become a nationally recognized issue. The scope is staggering. As many as 4,000 Indigenous women have been killed or have gone missing across Canada over the last 25 years. Paul Tuckerow is a member of the Mixu Cree First Nation in northern Alberta. His sister Amber went missing back in 2010. Her remains were found 2 years later, and her murderer has never been caught. Paul joins me now from Fort Chipewyan in northern Alberta to tell his story. Paul, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me.
Paul, just to start, tell me a little bit about Amber, what she was like.
Well, she was our baby sister in our family, and she was the only girl in our family, so she was kind of a baby there, so everybody kind of loved her, took care of her and stuff like that.
So when Amber went away, when she disappeared, do you remember what that was like for your family, what the shock was like?
Well, for sure, yeah. Like, especially because when she went missing, the person that she was with there, you know, she had her stories mixed up, and then so my mom had to, she had called and said that Amber left, but nobody really knows what happened. So my mom was kind of shocked because she had her son Jacob with her, and, you know, when she had a hard time to get her back from the authorities, because the little woman that was with my sister, her stories kept changing, and so that was a process in itself, and I think it would affect anybody if your loved one went missing.
And so when you found out that your sister was missing, Paul, what was the experience like with the police, with authorities, with the people who were working to find her and telling your family what they knew?
It was kind of hard on a family because when my mom tried to report her, they just said, oh, she's probably out partying. You know, let's just wait 24 hours and wait till she comes back. And my mom was saying, no, she was not partying. And even with that, like, they didn't believe that she was missing. And because she was a young Aboriginal girl around Edmonton, you know, they just tried to categorize her as being living a high-risk lifestyle and trying to be stereotype on her, which wasn't good for anybody.
Do you feel that the police were slow to investigate her disappearance because of that?
Yep. Like, we put in complaints. My mom's documented everything. You know, they even admitted they messed up in a meeting saying that, oh, yeah, we had your sister's evidence. We had it at the detachment, but for whatever reason, it got thrown in the garbage. And we're like, well, you know what? In this day and age, stuff like that shouldn't happen. And they just brushed it off.
So, Paul, why do you think Amber was killed?
I think she was killed because she was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and plus she was a young Aboriginal girl who people around that area thought, well, you know what, Aboriginal girls have gone missing around the area, and they thought, well, you know, I'll just do whatever I want, and I'll kill them, and then they won't really investigate or really care. That's what our family thinks.
What makes you and your family feel that way, that somebody would essentially feel like they could get away with it with Amber?
Just that reason, because even like around that area, there's other Aboriginal women that went missing and then who were later found. And those cases, they weren't really investigated, or they weren't given the publicity or the attention, I guess. And so around Edmonton area, you know, if you're a young Aboriginal girl and if you go missing right away, they don't care if you come from a good home. They don't care if you trying to have a good life or anything. Right away, they assume the worst and say, oh, you live a high-risk lifestyle. You know, they're in the sex trade industry, and you get put in this category, which isn't right, which isn't fair to these girls. Like, that's what they tried to say about my sister. But yet, a week before she went missing, she was living with my mom with her son. And she always did, except for when she went to live with my dad or whatever.
Now, Paul, you're from a community that's very small, right? Just about 1,000 people.
Yep.
And yet you just told me that your family and you had knowledge of lots of women who've gone missing. And that's pretty shocking when you come from a town with only 1,000 people in it. Has your community experienced things like this before?
Oh, yeah. There's other women, men that have gone missing from our community. And that's what I don't understand is, you know, we're grateful for the media, whatever, for my sister, but there's other women that have gone missing from my community and men, and then we never see them in the news, and we're asking ourselves, why is that? You know, how come they don't really, all you see is, oh, missing persons sign all over the place, and that's it.
Paul, you testified in front of the National Commission on Missing and Killed Women and Girls in Canada. It's a report that's going to probably take a long time to get implemented, but what do you need to see if the country is really going to start to pay attention to this problem, to experiences like your family had with Amber? What does good change look like to you?
Well, the way it's going right now, like, there's a lot of debate that, you know, a lot of money's being spent, but there's not really any results happening other than them having their meetings. And even with the recommendations, what's going to realistically become of it? Because even after I testified, I said, okay, well, what's going to be the follow-up? What's going to become of the recommendations that our family made? Because it was like a day or 2 days before, or even the day that we arrived there, all of a sudden they had this interim report. So obviously, when we testified, when is our report going to be released? Because in order for it to happen, I think they need to include the families, not meet with the families and tell us what's good for us. They need to hear us out and not just listen to us, but include us.
Well, Paul, the inquiry will march forward. I'm sure there will be final recommendations at some point. We'll see if politicians and officials in Ottawa act on it. But what about you? What about your family? Do you have any hopes that Amber's killer might actually be found at this point?
Yeah, you know, we're not gonna give up for sure. Like, our family, like, we're working on some things right now, just because the way my sister's case was handled with the RCMP. There's a lot of things that the RCMP did for us that they've never done for any other families before. And we're saying, well, you know, if you're going to do that for our family, you should do that for other families. Because it's owed to these women that, you know, that they'd be taken seriously, that they're missing, and they get the attention that they deserve.
Paul Tuckereau is a member of the Mixu Cree First Nation in northern Alberta. His sister Amber was 20 years old when she went missing back in 2010 and was later found dead. Paul, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
This week, a UN special rapporteur on violence against women offered a grim assessment, saying Canada needs to do more to stop the violence and the discrimination at its heart. Now, that task falls in part to Judge Marion Buller.
This is a national tragedy.
Marion Buller is Chief Commissioner for the National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls, opened in 2015, and she's a member of the Mitsawassis First Nation in Saskatchewan.
We want to be able to hear about and identify systemic causes of violence against Indigenous women and girls, and then to find out what's working in communities to reduce violence.
Now, that inquiry is behind schedule and only has preliminary results so far, but I asked Judge Buller how she would explain what's behind the crisis of violence.
There isn't one cause. There are several causes that overlap. One of them is generations of grinding poverty amongst Indigenous people across Canada. Another one is geographical isolation for a lot of women in Canada, especially in the north. Also, we're finding that from time to time, police services aren't as attentive as perhaps they could be or should be. We're also finding that lack of understanding of where to call or who to reach out to. There are a variety of causes, and it's really difficult to isolate one without bringing in others.
Judge, there are thousands of stories contained in your report as it is so far, and I know every story is different, but can you paint a picture for me as you visit a village in Saskatchewan or somewhere else around Canada about what families and women are telling you about their own experiences?
I think I can divide the stories into two different groups. The first type of group we hear from are made up of family members who have lost a wife, a daughter, a niece, a loved one. And they're telling us about how that lost loved one went missing and ultimately their remains were found, and how from the very beginning police response wasn't satisfactory to them. In some cases they had to start their own searches. And then when they receive the cause of death from the coroner, the cause of death doesn't make any sense to them. The second group of types of witnesses we hear from are survivors of violence, women who have been in violent relationships or have lived on the streets for a period of time. And we hear from them about being afraid to call for help sometimes because they are afraid that they'll lose their children if they do, or if they have called for help in the past, that help has been late in arriving, or they haven't been believed by police services or by social workers. So they're somewhat reluctant to reach out based on history.
Well, Judge, you described the systemic discrimination, the poverty that feeds into this violence that the report describes. But I want to get at some of the causes, because discrimination and poverty on their own don't kill women or cause them to disappear. There are perpetrators here. And I assume in many cases those perpetrators are people, men, in those women's lives. What do we know about who's actually doing these crimes?
There isn't one stereotype of offender. And I think that's part of the problem. Police and others have looked to stereotypes and maybe gone down the wrong avenue of investigation as a result. You're quite correct. It isn't just one thing that causes a lack of safety for Indigenous women and girls. It's a variety of things. And I think I can sum it up probably most succinctly in one word, and that's history. Canadian history with Indigenous people is different from Americans. Our laws are different, and our history is different. In Canada, Indigenous people were not allowed to vote, were not allowed to live off reserves, couldn't hold professional degrees, were legally obligated to attend residential schools. And this has led to generations of PTSD, second-rate education, second-rate health care, just an overwhelming number of children in protection and foster care, that sort of thing. That's really led to an attack on family structure, community structure, language, culture, all of the things that keep people together.
And Judge, can you talk for a moment about your own experience as a member of the Mistawasis First Nation in Saskatchewan?
My grandfather, he gave up his treaty rights. He gave up his identity as an Indian, as it was he was called then, so that he could live and work off of reserve. He wanted to be able to support his family, and so he gave up his rights. Well, back then, when that happened, the whole family, including my dad, lost his rights. So we're one of many families who technically, legally, are Indigenous people, but lost our identity because of the way the law worked. We were able to be reinstated because the government changed the law. So now all of the people in my generation, my brother and cousins, all have our status back. So it's an interesting twist of Canadian history that in order to support his family, he had to give up his status.
And what does that experience tell you about what so many First Nations women are experiencing today?
Well, what it does is it makes us more vulnerable. We neither qualify for certain benefits, but also we qualify for second-rate benefits. And I'm talking about day-to-day living benefits, your health benefits, education, things of that nature.
Well, Judge, you've got an interim report here. As I said, the UN envoy issued a very stark warning that the situation is urgent. What can the government do right now, today, next week, to start to protect women and girls in Indigenous communities long before you'll have a final report making your recommendations?
Just the basics, like making sure that reserves across Canada have clean drinking water. There are still many, many reserves across Canada where there are boil water advisories because people can't drink the water that comes out of their taps. I'm just talking basic human rights. This isn't a mystery. This is what the UN envoys in the past have already recommended.
The Honorable Marion Buller. Judge Buller, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's been a great time talking to you.
Judge Marion Buller is Chief Commissioner for the National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls in Canada. We'll be We've been talking about Canada today, but violence against Native women is also a huge problem here in the United States. Earlier this year, protesters took to the streets in Minnesota.
My sister-in-law has been missing since January of 07. We just want answers. Bring her home. Her name is Kateri Marie Michelle.
A New York Times investigation found that Native women are 10 times more likely to be murdered than other Americans. They're 4 times as likely to be raped or sexually assaulted, and 1 in 3 Native women have either been raped or experienced an attempted rape.
It's real close to us here in Minnesota because we have so many local in the state missing. And think about the missing and the murdered Indigenous women in all the work that you do.
Have you heard about this issue before, missing and murdered Indigenous women in America, North America, or the United States? Reach us on Twitter. You can always join the conversation on our Facebook page. And hearing from you is so important to what we do. This is The Takeaway.